The Blue Jays bounce back nicely after getting swept by the Mets to take 3 out of 4 in Fenway Park. Let's get into it. Good evening, everybody. It is Thursday, April 10th, and welcome to episode 245 of Buds and Blue Jays. It's your place for all things related to the Toronto Blue Jays. Jesse Burrell joined by Jesse Chirico, and today on the show, we are joined as well by three-time guest on the show, three times, Scott Dulford from the Walk Off Podcast to talk all things Toronto Blue Jays. Scott, great to have you here. Welcome back to the show.
Well, Jesse and Jesse, thank you so much for having me back. Number one, whenever I come on, I always like there to be a baby crying in the background. It's one of the things that I demand on my appearances. And
Little cat has to make an appearance.
Secondly, I want to just say, Jesse, after 245 intros, you've got that bad boy down, buddy.
It has changed a time or two over the course of the era, as the podcast, as longtime listeners will know. But once you do enough of these, it does kind of become second nature. Scott, glad to have you back.
Yeah, man.
Glad you're a fan, as always. Yeah, Jesse, glad to have you on the show, too. Gentlemen, we have a lot to get into over the course of this series, but I'll recap what happened here just for the folks listening at home. Game one, the Blue Jays take care of business behind a very strong Kevin Gausman start, win that game 6-2. Game two, 6-1 final for the Blue Jays. And then game three and four both had extra innings. Game three, the Blue Jays win 2-1. And in game four that just took place this afternoon, the Red Sox came ahead victorious 4-3. So after the series, the Blue Jays sit with an 8-6 record. We are still tied for first place with those 7-5 New York Yankees. And our playoff odds have jumped to 47%, according to Fangraphs. So gentlemen, without further ado, why don't we get into our player of the series? And Scott, as the guest, we will start with you. Give us your player of the series for this series against the Red Sox.
I'm going to go pitching. I mean, in all honesty, why wouldn't I? Of all the choices, and there's plenty of them, they're mostly all pitchers. And so I'm going to go with the hound dog. I'm going to go with Chris Bassitt. This is the guy who was probably the biggest question mark in my mind going into the season. I didn't know what we were going to get out of 36-year-old Chris Bassitt. And honestly, every start this year, the guy has been nails in big situations when they need to stop a losing streak, when they need a guy to eat innings. He has been there, and he did it again all week long. And Chris Bassitt is my Blue Jay of the week, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal has Chris Bassitt been this season. What did he throw today? 5 2/3 innings pitch, only one earned run allowed, 5 more strikeouts. Absolutely phenomenal. And I think after
weather too, like it sucks right now. We were talking before we went actually live, but man, watching that Boston series, I was so glad not to be at the ballpark. And I never feel that way.
Something about sitting at home in our cozy apartments feel a lot nicer. Jesse, do you have a thought on Chris Bassitt there?
Oh, definitely solid, especially now hearing that he was dealing with neck issues during that game too. So he had to like readjust his mechanics. And also, like you were saying about the weather, I'm so glad we have a dome for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not alone. I'm sure every Blue Jay can't wait to get back to Toronto right now.
Yeah, 10-game early season road trip for the Blue Jays, too, where we go into Queens, New York, where it's cold, into Fenway, where it's cold. And the weather for Baltimore is going to feel a lot warmer than it does now, though, is still kind of going to be iffy. Getting back home, especially after spending, 6 weeks in Florida and then coming up to Toronto, is going to make a difference here. I do want to say on Chris Bassitt, I'm pretty sure after the start today, he has now accumulated over one full WAR in Fangraphs, which by far leads the Blue Jays. And 14 games into the season, he's already got one win above replacement. Someone do the math on that. That's 12 WAR season for Chris Bassitt. Obviously won't happen, but man, that would be wild and impressive for the hound dog.
Definitely better than last year.
That's not setting the bar very high, but it has been very encouraging to see. Jesse, hit us with your player of the series here against the Red Sox.
Well, I'll definitely give it to Kevin Gausman from yesterday's game. Like just after having his last outing where he had no punches and was throwing 10 to the strikes again in miserable weather and really only being a one-pitch pitcher pretty much that game too, and having that dominance, like I can't complain there.
Yeah,
I love that line, he kept going to the fastball too. You know, like he just once he figured out it was getting outs, he didn't start to change the formula or mix it up. Like for eight solid innings, he just attacked him. It was awesome.
I was. Go ahead, Jesse.
Well, I was going to say exactly. And like, it was just like, he's like, that saying, like, throw it until they can hit it. I was like, hey, how many times you threw it? And they still never hit it.
Yeah, I was listening to some SiriusXM radio this morning before the game started, and they had Alex Cora on, and they were asking Alex Cora about the series and what he thought about the Red Sox. And he said it in nicer terms than this, but he's like, we just effing can't hit the fastball. Like, what's going on? And I think he mentioned in the start yesterday that they struck out 10 times just on fastballs alone, which was a lot. And good for Kevin Gausman, veteran move, going out there and recognizing it. I think the final line for Kevin Gausman, 8 innings pitched. The only run he allowed was unearned in the first, I believe he had here. Yeah, no earned runs, no walks, 10 strikeouts. Absolutely dominance on the short list for one of the best starts as Kevin Gausman's career.
Can we touch on yesterday's game a little bit? Because that was such a masterful pitching. Like, just to watch it front to back go down in every way, the way the bullpen was deployed, the way that it laid out and the way it worked, it was fantastic. Hoffman being able to get out of that ninth inning with only 6 pitches so that he could go the 10th, and then Sandlin working out so well. I almost got too high on Sandlin there for a second. I mean, and then we watched him, we watched him today. Although honestly, today, a little bit of stroke of bad luck, some bad umpiring, some bad lumps kind of sent his way, but what do you do?
Yeah, and we'll touch on that when we get to the bullpen thing.
You're like, Scott, you're jumping all over the place. Stop.
That's okay. You're excited. There's a lot that happened in this series and a lot we have to get to. After last night's game, though, when you were talking about it, Jays used 3 pitchers, right? Kevin Gausman, Jeff Hoffman, and then Nick Sandlin for the save. All 3 pitchers, phenomenal. If you look at FanGraphs, like win probability added for each of those 3 pitchers, all of them were worth like almost half a win alone, or however that math works out. Like Gausman's 8 innings was phenomenal. Jeff Hoffman was dominant in high leverage in his 2. Mm-hmm. And then Nick Sandlin coming down and nailing his first save as a Toronto Blue Jay. All 3 of them nails in that series. Got to be one of the most impressive just pure team pitching performances. And shout out, honestly, guys, to Jeff Hoffman.
Yeah. Like,
absolutely phenomenal with what he's been doing so far this season. I don't want to look now at what Jordan Romano has been doing in Philadelphia, but if you have been looking, it has not been pretty. And yeah, it feels easy whenever Jeff Hoffman is on the mound.
Agreed. And
off to the races we go.
Yeah. Honestly, like, he has stepped up to that closing role beautifully. And, you know, there's always question marks when a guy's never done it before. And he has just been lights out every time he's hit the mound. So just big.
Absolutely. This team is going to win a lot more games with the combination of Jimmy Garcia and Jeff Hoffman back there. Guys, I want to give my player of the series and shout out to Easton Lucas, who, holy crap, guys, he did it again in this one. 5 1/3 innings pitched, 3 hits allowed, 0 earned runs, 1 walk, 8 Ks. I just wrote an article for jcenter.com about Easton Lucas. I encourage everybody, go check that out. But guys, what he has done in his first 2 starts now with the Toronto Blue Jays, and I stole this stat from Jonah Bierenbaum, who works for The Score, so I want to give him credit, but this made me say, wow, he becomes the 4th pitcher ever in Blue Jays history to go 5 innings pitch with no runs, no extra base hits, and 4 or fewer base runners allowed, joining a list of Dave Steeb, Marcus Stroman, and Ross Stripling as the only other Toronto Blue Jays to ever do it. And he is
hilarious. Ross Stripling's in that list.
You'll remember Ross Stripling in that 2022 season, though, the run he went on.
He was unreal.
Literally saved the season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So very impressive stuff for Easton Lucas. His next start will be Sunday against Baltimore. And I don't know, guys, I'm watching him pitch. I get shades of Cole Hamels a little bit with the kind of way he comes out of the left-hand side. The changeup's obviously not as good as Cole Hamels, but just watching him, and there's something with his fastball that other teams aren't getting at, and it's been very impressive for me.
Yeah, if you looked at his pitch selection from last year too, he used the cutter about 20% of the time, and he's basically eliminated it or kind of morphed it into the sweeper, and it has worked so much better. So I don't know if that's like something P. Walker dialed in on and suggested, or just something that he was working on anyways. But yeah, his pitch sequencing this year and just his ability to hit his spots has been amazing. So, like, fingers crossed, maybe we found, like, this is everything that Easton Lucas gives us, guys, is found money. Like, literally every inning that goes our way is just bonus. So, depth, man. It's I questioned it at the beginning of the season when it came to Lucas being our only depth, really, you know, especially if you look at, and you teased it already, we're going to check on the prospects. We're going to look at Jake Bloss probably. Mm-hmm. It's not great, right? So it's nice that a young guy that still needs some development has that cushion and that Lucas has worked out so well for us.
Yeah, and plus two, it gives Max Scherzer, the Blue Jays, more time to just let him recover, let him rest. No great need point. To rush Max Scherzer, make sure he's healthy because Easton Lucas is giving him this. Jesse, we've talked to all the other three starting pitchers. We might as well leave you with the fourth one. It seems like a long time ago, but Jose Berríos did take the mound in this opener, and he went 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts. Do you have a thought about Jose Berríos' performance in this series?
That was probably the one game I didn't get much able to watch much because I was working, but definitely from what I saw, like in the conditions and him being able to do that was even more impressive. And like there was even concerns that if the game would even start, and he comes out and dominates.
It felt like a must win too, right, man? Like they did just three in a row, right? Yeah,
yeah. And like he set the table for us.
Yeah, the Red Sox, too, had just played a doubleheader the night before. They were cruising. They scored, 50 runs against the Cardinals in their doubleheader, something like that on Sunday Night Baseball. So Jose Berríos was able to come in there and shut the door was good. Also, flashing back to that Thursday game, because the Red Sox had just played a doubleheader the night before, I thought they did a very good job, especially early in that game, of working I think it was Fitz was the pitcher working up his pitch count quite early in the game to attack that bullpen. Jesse, you and I talk a lot about setting the tone early in a series, getting deep into that bullpen. And I think part of the reason the Jays were able to win 3 out of 4 here was because of the work they did in game one, getting into that Red Sox bullpen.
Oh, 100%. Even in game two against Crochet, he was at 80 plus pitches by the fourth inning or fifth inning or something like that. Yeah, like you can't
tough pitcher.
Exactly, and like make their bullpen do all the work where they're used to short outings.
All right, well, good stuff from the Toronto Blue Jays starting pitching. It's been no secret they since opening day they do have the best ERA from the starting pitchers. But guys, we got to talk about some other stuff with this team, and let's talk offense. And there was a lot of interesting offensive performances in the series. 4 games went by, still no home runs from the top 3 players in our batting order. In fact, the Jays only got 1 home run all series. And it came from George Springer, who now has his 2nd of the season. Gentlemen, Scott, we'll go with you first. Pick your offensive player du jour and tell us what you want to say, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah, it has been very disappointing to see the lack of power early out of Anthony Santander. And I know he is a notorious slow starter. You look at his career, and this is just something that happens with him. His April always kind of stinks, and he heats up as so does the weather. But this team needs him to start showing up in a more significant way. And we're starting to see glimpses of it, right? Like he's having some good at bats. He's not looking quite as lost at the plate, but definitely need to see some power out of Santander. And I mean, this series was weird because it gave me hope out of the gate that we were putting together the right lineups, that things was coming our way when it was, you look at the offense, right? 6 runs each of the first 2 games of this series. No home runs. So I was hopeful because I was like, you know what? When the home runs come, like we're scoring 6 a game with singles. When the home runs come, oh, baby, the floodgates are opening. And instead, the last 2 games, I mean, they scored, 5 runs? Five combined run, and it wasn't even 2 regular length games. It was like over 22 innings. So again, no home runs. And when the singles dry up, then you're in hard, right? And then you look like the 2023 Blue Jays, and like all of us fans have PTSD just thinking about it.
That is true. And that's how you get into, like, you'll hit 2 singles and then the next guy hits into a double play, or you'll do what happened a few times in this series. You'll line drive to right. Jimenez is on the move and he's thrown out at first. Like we saw that a few times.
Momentum killer.
The score runs. Yeah, exactly. And it's hard to score runs stringing a bunch of hits together when a game like today would have been perfect to just get that two-run home run, and then we win this game easily. Jesse, do you have a thought on Santander and his slow start at the plate?
It is concerning, but again, like, he's notorious to be a slow starter. I definitely feel like possibly being back in Camden Yards tomorrow could possibly be his
coming out party. I like it.
Exactly. And he can finally beat Tony Taylor instead of Tony Strikeout. But I hope for that. But I feel like, again, it's the good old Wilder thing. It's still early. It's only the first month. So, to a certain level, it's a low, but I definitely feel like we need production from our big boys.
Okay, yeah. I will say I was watching Santander very closely today because me, like several other Blue Jays fans, are just waiting for that thing to go. They threw him a lot of fastballs on the inside part of the plate, and there was a few times his hands almost looked a little jumpy, like he was kind of jumping back a little bit, or he flinched a little bit on those pitches. Could be a thing of maybe he's not seeing them well. I will say, though, he had three balls in this series, hit over 100 and so miles per hour. He had a ball today that he just hit foul that would have been a home run. I'm starting to see some signs that it's coming around. One of the called strike threes I thought was very clearly ball four, which he wasn't the only Blue Jay that had that happen here today. But I am starting to see some positive signs from Santander, and I think once he just gets that first one, it'll start going. But I will say, guys, just one extra base hit and only two RBIs for Santander so far this season. You got to start seeing better and seeing better soon.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I mean, Vladdy sure could start showing up in a little bit more significant way. And that's almost unfair because over the last week, he has almost an 800 OPS, which is more than fine, right? But again, the lack of power, it makes it even more apparent he's not hitting dingers when nobody else is, right? When you're relying on 35-year-old George Springer to run into him and he's your lone source. You know, when Andre Jimenez dries up, and he did that quick, he had three in, 3 days? And then we haven't seen him go long since either. So I don't think we need to rely on these secondary guys. What we really need to happen is Tony Taters to be who he is and for Vladdy to start running into a few.
And we're all quite confident that that's going to happen, right? No way the Blue Jays really are dead last in home runs, right?
Oh, God, no.
But it would sure be nice to see one. Will Wagner, I thought, would have a home run by now. He's played a lot early in the season because the Jays have only seen, I think, three left-handed starters so far this year. Would have been nice to see him get one. Alan Rodon had a great spring, and we have yet to see him hit a home run.
Yeah.
There are a few other names, David Schneider doesn't have one. Ernie Clement doesn't have one. There are a few names on here we really thought probably would have had a home run or two by now.
It'd be nice to see Stern actually have a hit, but that's here nor there.
He did have a hit this series, just one, but he did have one. And with the strikeout he had in the game today, David Schneider's strikeout rate has gone over 50%. In this season, which major
that's getting tough to justify having on your bench,
And I will say too, when the Red Sox brought in a left-handed reliever today, and the Blue Jays went to their bench, they chose Miles Straw over Davis Schneider, which I thought was interesting. And then if you're choosing literally Miles Straw to hit instead of Davis Schneider here, then it might be time to move on from Davis Schneider. It's a shame, though, because Orelvis Martinez would fit that role almost perfectly, and he has struggled quite a bit after dealing with his sickness down in AAA. But I think if this continues, it won't be too much longer before we see that spot on the roster go to somebody else.
Has it ever been interesting, boys, to see the biggest surprises? And I think depth falls into that category because I know you just brought up Miles Straw, who has been nothing but spectacular in the few opportunities that he's been given. He's been so reliable defensively. He's come up huge when our main center fielder goes down, and he's probably playing just as admirably defensively, which is absolutely crazy. He's getting his hits. You look at Tyler Heineman, who I was shocked was the backup catcher they were going to go with. Nathan Lucas has been fantastic in the positions that he has been put in. He has played all over that outfield. He's been reliable defensively, and he's starting to get his hits. And you know what is another thing that really is intriguing about this year's depth is look at the age of these guys. Like Tyler Heineman's 33. Miles Straw's 30. Nathan Lucas is 31. Like these are boys who are not prospects. These are guys that are literally playing for their major league careers. They have everything on the line. They've been there and been given their chances, and this might be their last ones, right? Like Miles Straw is actually earning his money. Who would have bet on that at the beginning of this season?
Maybe the Blue Jays, this wasn't about Roky Sasaki at all. Maybe this was, no, we just really like Miles Straw, you know, this whole time. Jesse, I bet you have a thought on those players here. Tyler Heineman, phenomenal. Threw out a couple base runners too, might I add, behind the plate. Got two starts now in this series. He's been good. Miles Straw's been good. Yeah, pick your player.
Exactly. I was going to make the point. I can't get my hands on that Heine any faster with how good it looks. But Tyler Heineman, three hits and throwing two guys out, and one of them being Jared Duran, who's probably one of the top base stealers and one of the fastest guys in the league, is, and seeing how fast he's getting the ball out compared to seeing how Kirk tried to throw Duran out in game three. But Heineman has been
captained Easton Lucas was impressive too, right? Like, he's a kid still. I know he's 28, but he's a guy who was, had he failed, he might have been DFA'd again, right? He was playing for his job.
Guys, go ahead, Jesse. Finish up.
I was just saying, how he's been able to work with Easton Lucas in his two starts giving a pitch, telling him to go, and getting set up so Easton Lucas has that target. He's been spectacular and way more than what we expected him to be, knowing he was a backup and what he's been in the past year. He's literally been a magician, and not making a pun of the way he is in a clubhouse, but been a magician behind the plate.
So guys, at what point then do we start to look at Tyler Heineman's hot start and then look at what Alejandro Kirk has done at the plate, which is not good, who I might add still has not drawn a walk yet this year for Alejandro Kirk. That's not good. At what point now do we start saying, okay, maybe Heineman should be getting behind the plate, should be getting more starts for this team going forward? We're not there yet, I don't think, but when do we start having that conversation?
Can I say never?
That's probably the right answer, but yes.
The truth is, let's just enjoy Tyler Heineman's hot start. He's 33 years old. This is not the start of some sort of rising of a starting catcher, right? Tyler Heineman is succeeding because he has learned how to take the few opportunities he gets and maximize them. And so to put him in a situation where he has to really work with probably more than he has, you're just asking for bad luck. I mean, he's 33, right? You turn the baseball card over and it's his career numbers are probably what you're going to get.
It's a safe bet. Jesse, do you have the same thing or do you think something different?
Oh, I totally agree. It's almost like what we had a few years ago with Zach Collins. Just ride the hot hand.
Yes.
When it disappears, when it goes down, yes, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Very, very smart. I didn't expect a Zach Collins reference on the podcast here today. So very likely. Okay. So you guys overall, though, you guys aren't too worried yet about Alejandro Kirk at the plate, yeah?
No. I think he's going to put it together. I mean, he looked so good in spring, which is always a mistake that I make as a fan, is I buy too much into the stock of what people are doing in spring. So, but he looked really good, and his exit velo was good. He's still hitting the ball hard. He's just, I don't know, he's slumping.
All right. Makes sense. And I have three more Blue Jays hitters I thought now would be a good time to check in on as we are 14 games or so into the regular season. And the first one, gentlemen, Alan Rodon, who was the talk of the Blue Jays coming out of spring, hasn't done a ton yet so far. He did break an 0-for-13 stretch with a base hit here today, was left for a pinch hitter late in this ball game. Jesse, we'll start with you. A thought on Alan Rodon's performance so far this season?
Like 14 games into his career, yes, we expected him to possibly be what he was in spring. But again, spring stats don't count. Am I concerned? No. And just give him time. Give him time to marinate. He'll find his groove, and we won't be thinking about these first 14 games while he's been struggling.
Okay. Worth noting. Scott?
I might be too high on him. I love everything I see, honestly. Mm. The kid looks like a ball player. He is so dialed in, even though his numbers are not where we maybe would really want them to be. He's almost there. He doesn't look overmatched. And every time that he goes down swinging or goes down, you can tell that he's trying to figure out the math in his head as to what he needs to do to move this forward or whatever that is, figure out whatever it is. And I love the way he approaches the game. He's all out. When he's in the outfield, he's chasing down flies. He's putting his body on the line. I think it was 2 games ago in the Boston series where it was coming in close to him and he kind of leaned in. You could tell he was like ready to take that hit. You know, it's just like little things like that, that he sees what he can do for the team and he's prepared to do it. And I just love that.
Yeah, it seems like he's well on his way too. I will say a lot of the quality of contact off his bat, he has had a couple pop-ups. He has had some soft ground balls. You do want to see the barrels start coming for Alan Rodon, but I think it's time. Remember, he is seeing all of these pitchers for the first time in his big league career. I think if he can just keep his head above water early in the year, there will come a stretch where Alan Rodon really hits the ground running. And I think I'm agree with both of you that it is too early to give up on that yet. The next hitter I would like to talk about here, guys, George Springer. We talked about him a lot last episode. Another home run in this series. He reached base via catcher's interference. I'm pretty sure he had 3 straight RBI singles at one point in this series. Guys, absolute revelation for George Springer. Scott, we'll go to you first this time for George. Tell me about the old man Springer. Guys still got it, eh?
Love to see it, and especially when we need a cleanup hitter so badly, it's been nice that he's been able to kind of fill that void. Listen, I also do think that there is a 80% likelihood that there is some point where I am lucky enough to be guests on Buds and Blue Jays again, let's say in June, and we're talking about how hot Alan Rodon is and what happened to George Springer. So baseball is a funny thing. You probably don't want to get too high on one guy's streak and too low on one guy's slump. I think George Springer has been fantastic. He needed to do this for his own confidence after last year. And I mean, I know we're only 14 games into the season, but if you're leading Major League Baseball in batting average for any 14 game span, you're doing all right.
He's making us look dumb is what he's really doing for all the takes we made in the offseason. But Jesse, thought on old man George Springer and his series here.
He's definitely got a spring in his step and found the fountain of youth. So I'll take it while it lasts. And like, if it lasts most of the season, obviously he won't be hitting that at that average, but like if he's producing like this, it'll be like 2021 and 2022 when he first came here. And like, I'll take that any day.
Yeah. You're not alone there. I don't know if you guys watched Blue Jay Central before the game today, but they had Mike Petriello on from he's the StatCast guy, had a lot of stuff. And they've noticed that George Springer is just swinging the bat so much harder, particularly at fastballs. So that is by design. That's got to be on purpose. So it means 2 things. One, he is seeing the pitches better coming out of the hand. He's been able to recognize what pitch is which, and that his body still has it to swing harder. I want to give a shout out to Dave Popkins, because that's what he talked about a lot, getting your pitch swinging hard at it and doing damage when you get it. We haven't seen it with every Toronto Blue Jay, but we're seeing it with George Springer, and it's led to early success. Now pitchers will adjust. It'll be up to George to make an adjustment again and go on from there, but you gotta love what you're seeing from Springer here. And then the last player, guys, I thought would be a good time to check in on is Andrés Giménez, who, as Scott, you mentioned earlier, got off to that very big hot start. The power's kind of gone away from Andrés Giménez, but he's been holding his own. What are your thoughts on him now, 14 games into the season?
I really like him. I really like him. I didn't know what to expect when the trade was made and they shipped Spencer Horowitz out and you knew you were getting a defensive first player. But what he has done for this team, like shoring up second base, has been so important. And I think that it was kind of overshadowed a little bit with how bad the bullpen was last year as an area of need. And they did need a second baseman who could field the position properly. I think that Giménez just plays baseball the right way, and that yeah, we're going to see stints like this, right? Like if you look at what he's done the last week, it hasn't been enough. He probably would be best suited to kind of be placed in that seven hole in the lineup and just let him be depth in a deep lineup and hope that he runs into some here and there, that he has those weeks where he's hitting three dingers, and that, yeah, you're probably going to have 2 weeks stints where you're crossing your fingers and hoping he's at least hitting singles when there's ducks on the pond.
Jesse, thoughts on Jimenez so far?
Oh definitely. Like, I remember, like, just the excitement we were when we acquired him. He's definitely proven why we were excited. And yeah, he had a couple bad bounces in the series, like the end of today's game. And yesterday, but it happens. Like, but like, he's literally been like what I've been saying, like what Robbie Alomar was for the 92-93 teams. Like, just that sure hand defensive player and all that.
Yeah, he's not going to hit anywhere close to what Robbie Alomar did in those times, but having that gold glove there is nice. I will say, too, two more stolen bases for Andrés Giménez in this series. Mm-hmm. He's the only Blue Jay to steal a bag here. And John Schneider seems to like let him go whenever he's on first. I think he had another one. Will Wagner was behind him. Andrés Giménez was on base, tried to steal second, and then there was a hard line drive to right, which was caught, and he was doubled off first base. But he's been going, and he's been moving, mm-hmm. and it's something the Blue Jays actually really do need out of Andrés Giménez. I hope that when, like, Varsho comes back and our lineup can thin out a little bit, that what Scott said, he does hit a little bit lower. But I'm pretty chill with what Andrés Giménez has done so far.
Yeah, he's been awesome.
Right, yeah, much less to be said on that. All right, guys, let's talk about the bullpen here. And we did touch on a little bit earlier this season. We talked about Jeff Hoffman. We talked about some good from Nick Sandlin getting the save in game three, and then the bad today where he hit two guys, gave up two hits, and ultimately took the loss here. Anybody else in the bullpen that caught your attention? Brandon Little threw a bit. Chad Green's been good since the blunders early. Yariel Rodriguez only came in once this series. Jesse, we'll start with you. Pick a guy and see what caught your attention.
Oh, it's Jimmy Heaters. Like, I guess his first outing, he wasn't the most crisp like he normally was, but again, blame it on the illness. But like today, he looked solid in his inning in relief, and like, it's so nice to have him and Hoffman in the back end where you can have either one close the game and have no worries.
Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't worried at all when I knew Jeff Hoffman wasn't going to be available today. And if we had to have Jimmy Garcia come down and nail a save, I really thought we could. And it's been a long time since we've had two of those guys from the Blue Jays pen. Scott, your guy out of the bullpen, either way you want to take it, go ahead.
I mean, you just mentioned him a bunch, but I got to go with Jeff Hoffman because, my goodness, that performance on Wednesday from him where he gutted out two innings in a situation where they needed him to do that was so impressive. I mean, there were question marks when they went out and signed him for that kind of money to be the closer when he'd never closed games before, but he has been the guy so far. And I mean, we're early on, but a good small sample size is the best sample size. So that's what he's provided so far. And again, another thing that I really like about Hoffman is his strikeout ability in the big moments. You need a K, he's got the ability to do that. Where, I mean, sometimes this bullpen is like that.
Yeah, Jeff Hoffman, I will say, as just pure relievers so far this season, has already accumulated half a war, is second best in all of baseball in terms of just pure relief pitchers. Mm-hmm. 14 games into the season, absolutely phenomenal. And I'm just trying to find the win probability added here. See if we can do that from Jeff Hoffman. Yeah, he's lower than I thought. He's 19th, but that's okay. Still doing some good things from Jeff Hoffman, and absolutely phenomenal. I want to talk about Brandon Little a little bit. Got into the game today. Again, he gave up a walk. He had struggled a little bit. The Blue Jays have kind of seemed to have had issues now with that number one left-handed reliever. Walking Jaron Duran was a tough look and helped Boston get that rally going late. Mason Fluharty, who was good in his one clean outing he had here, also didn't seem to do. Seems like he leaves you a little bit to be desired here. I would like, and I know it won't happen right away, but the Blue Jays at some point this season to add another high-impact left-handed reliever into this pen, especially one that could probably pound the strike zone a little bit more and search the waiver wire maybe if one becomes available, because I'd like to see the Blue Jays add one of those.
Yeah, I have to agree. I don't know. I don't trust Little. I know that the Blue Jays like him. I know that he has the ability to be a strikeout lefty, which is something that is obviously very appealing. I don't know if he's ready for that. Mason Fluharty looked like he was in over his head. Luckily, Nick Sandlin gets lefties out. I don't know. I was concerned about the lefty out of the pen going into the season. And honestly, I still have a lot of concerns.
Jesse, do you have a thought?
Oh, definitely. Literally since that 1 year of Mesa, or since even Brett Cecil, we haven't had a lefty be able to be that shutdown lefty and not have any fear. Mm-hmm. And we need that.
Yeah, especially with the amount of good left-handed hitters there are in this division. We've seen the Red Sox have a few of them, Gunnar Henderson of the Orioles. Like, there are more coming. So being able to get those guys out might be the difference of a winning or losing a game or two over the course of the season. Gentlemen, it's been 4 days now, and the contract for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is officially official. Jesse, you and I did a live emergency episode, and Scott, so did you. Yeah. Seems like every Blue Jays media person had to do an emergency episode here. But here we are. The deal is now official. We're 4 days past the breaking news. I just wanted to check in and hear what our thoughts are. And Scott, we'll start with you.
I just love that when you look at the contract written out, that you get to read the year Vladimir Guerrero Jr. under contract till 2039. Mm-hmm. Just listen to how that sounds. It sounds crazy. Like, we are going to have a guy for the entire span of his career, and not just a guy, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, a guy that has been hyped so much since they got him at 16 years old. You had those mega moments throughout his career, his home run at the Big O in Montreal, his popping onto the scene in 2020, and they make the playoffs. And, you know, like, there were so many moments, but none of the big ones that we wanted, right? Playoff wins, a World Series appearance. And so I really do like that they locked him up for the length of his career. I think ownership has proven that they're invested in this organization and that they're going to build around him. I don't think that they would invest this kind of money in him if they weren't going to do that. It makes no sense. And we just watched how much Rogers has dropped on sports in general over the last couple months.
Their big deal, honestly, with the NHL was a lot. Right?
Yeah, that's right. So, like, I don't think they're going to stop there. Who knows? We could watch Bo get signed. We could watch them really lock up some mega talent here. I think locking in Vladdy meant a lot just for intangibles too, right? Like, It kind of signals free agents that the Blue Jays have committed. There isn't a rebuild around the corner. They can come to Toronto and expect an ownership group that wants to win, which was a question this offseason. In alluring free agents, right? Because you looked at a team full of guys that were on expiring contracts, their current core, and you didn't know what direction they were going. And yes, it's easy for the front office to sit there with their lip service of, we're trying to win, we're doing this. But if you're a free agent, why would you listen to that when you have the Mets, you have the Red Sox, you have these other teams that are obviously trying to win, right? So I think it's fantastic. I think it's a great news for the city of Toronto, the country of Canada. I think it's great news for the Blue Jays. I'm thrilled with it. It's not my money. Hey ho, let's go, right?
Sounds very similar to things we've echoed. Jesse, a few days out now from the Vlad contract. Have your thoughts changed at all?
No, I still am disbelief that they actually got it done. How crazy the thing, like I said on our previous episode, when this contract's done, my 5-year-old daughter will be 19 years old when his contract's done.
She'll be drinking beer on the deck with you.
Exactly. He'll be like, back in my day, I was at his debut, and now he's retiring or going to Cooperstown. That stuff is just, it blows my mind. And just thinking that and just knowing now it's Vladdy's team and the culture will be Vladdy. And Well, I mean, like, when it comes to free agencies, they got, like, obviously Bo wants to be here with Vladdy, though that he's been out saying that. So if they extend it, we could literally have Bo and Vladdy until we're all at the retirement home together.
That'd be great. The Blue Jays fan that I was in 2018 watching New Hampshire Fisher Cats box scores absolutely loves the thought of them both playing their whole career in Toronto Blue Jays blue. Guys,
you know,
I don't
who
know
loves
if I'm,
this contract the most, boys? Cheap Kyle parents. Tucker. Cheap parents who can buy their kids a large Vladdy Guerrero jersey and be like, you're set for a decade, buddy. Like, mm-hmm. Good job. There you go.
I am going to go buy a Vladdy jersey in the next homestand.
Yeah, why not, right?
I'm going to, yeah. So it's going to be great. I will say, guys, when he did sign this massive contract, I immediately thought, okay, he'll be here till 2039. Let's assume that's the year he retires. He'll be up for the Hall of Fame in 2044. Okay, I guess I got to make a trip to Cooperstown for the induction ceremony because I think it's phenomenal. The Blue Jays, over the course of their young history, have never had a player start to finish, play their whole career, and have a career that Vlad might have. Like, guys, when 2039 comes and goes, he'll probably be the Blue Jays franchise record holder in home runs, hits, RBIs, you name the stat, it'll probably
better
be Vlad.
Be.
Yeah, if he's not, there's a problem. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And just have, as Keegan Matheson wrote in his article, from the guy who said yes to the Blue Jays as a 16-year-old, saying yes to us again, is a love story that all of us are after here. So yeah. That is fantastic and beyond thrilled.
Couldn't be.
Oh, happy. Definitely. And oh, definitely. And even though those videos, like after it was official, like, I'm not gonna lie, the home one, like put a little tear in my eye. Just think, like listening to that from his words, not like Hazel May or anyone talking. It was his words. I was like, I'm like, where's my Kleenex?
Yeah. And who says there's no crying in baseball, right? Oh, absolutely a thing of beauty. All right,
I love
guys.
When English Vladdy shows up. Did you see the interview he did with Hazel May after the win on Wednesday? And he just came out and like did the interview in English, and it was so good. And I was just like, my God, in 14 years, this guy's going to speak better English than I do. Like, it's just so awesome to see how good he's gotten at it. And he's feeling a little more confident with the English. And you can tell that it's something that he still doesn't wish to jump all in on and just like be a free for all. And like, I'm English now, but he is making concerted efforts to do English interviews. I love it.
Oh, I love it. Great.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jesse.
Oh, I was saying, I love it. And just like, yeah. And like, if he turns out he's now speaking in French because he's being born in Montreal, then I mean, that'll be even crazier.
Right?
Well, he's got 14 years to do it. So very much looking forward to how this plays out for honestly a large part of our Blue Jays fandom here. Guys, before we get to the end of this episode here, I just wanted to do a check-in on things down at the farm. And I found some notable things here. Treya Savage, our first overall pick from the last year's draft, was started in High A Dunedin. Mixed bag in his first start, 3 2/3 innings pitch, 1 hit, 0 earned runs, which was good, but 6 walks, not so good to go along with 4 strikeouts. Cal Stevens, who I believe was a second round pick from the Blue Jays, made his second start. Phenomenal. 6 innings pitch, 1 earned run, 1 hit, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. Some just notable things from looking down the Buffalo Bisons box score. Addison Barger, Joey Loperfido, Jonathan Class A have all been off to a good start for the Bisons. Peyton Williams, who you might know as the Iowa meat truck, went deep for his first home run with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. So all very good stuff there. And then as Scott, you mentioned earlier, Jake Bloss, though, really struggling down in the farm. Did any of those notes catch your attention, boys?
I definitely say keep a name Isle and like on Kelsey second round pick. Definitely was a sleeper, like someone to sleep on. Like this guy's a big boy, and like I feel like Treya Savage was the big addition at that draft, but like this guy will be turning heads you hear it now first right here.
I love that. I love that. Scott, did you have any prospect that's caught your attention?
Yeah, Jonathan Clase. I mean, his numbers are popping off the page in Buffalo right now. The kid has an OPS of 1,000. He's hitting .440. He's leading off regularly for the Bisons, and he's roaming the outfield with ease. His speed is like really one of those very, very attractive tools where you're like, oh my goodness, if we can get to this, to the point where this kid's getting on base, he's going to be a stolen base king. And he is, he's already stolen some bases. So I think Jonathan Clase, of course, he was who the Blue Jays got out of Seattle at the trade deadline last year for Jimmy Garcia, who's back with the team. So really, what a win-win for this team. So Clase is exciting. And I think everyone is also well aware that Addison Barger is probably the first call up if something happens. And his 880 OPS right now in Buffalo looks pretty good, too.
Yeah. 8 games for Jonathan Clase down there. You mentioned the batting average, the OPS just shy of 1,000. 4 steals in those. Yeah. Oh, sorry. 6 yeah. steals. 6 steals six in those steals. 8 games.
Yeah.
And just as many walks as strikeouts from Jonathan Clase.
Good. Jesse,
You've been all about the Jonathan Clase love since we got him last year, and albeit 8 games, guys, a long way to go, but
yes,
2 thumbs up from us here.
Oh, definitely. That's music to my ears.
All right. Well, with that being said, the next series now, the Blue Jays finish the long road trip to begin this season with 3 games at Camden Yards against the Baltimore Orioles. Probable pitchers, which I will load up in just 1 second here. I know we get Easton Lucas on Sunday. We have,
you know, Jose who it Rios, is the guy who Tell has me. Not been mentioned this whole show and yet has pitched his butt off the whole time and has been incredible, Bowden Francis.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild. We have not mentioned that man's name, and he has literally been nothing but lights out every single appearance. Unreal how good our pitching has been.
Lined up against Tomoyuki Sugano in game 1 tomorrow. Do you have a prediction for his line?
Yeah, I think
no through 7. Really well.
Yeah. Oh, you're going 7? I'm going to go 6 innings, 2 runs allowed.
All right. Game 2, Jose Berríos against Cade Povich. And then in the finale, it'll be Easton Lucas against Charlie Morton and his 9.5 ERA on the young season so far. Gentlemen, if we win this series, take 2 out of 3, it'll be a 500 road trip on the whole, which is what we wanted to see when the road trip started. Do you think we do it? Do we not quite do it? Do we sweep? Give me a prediction for the upcoming series.
I think they take 2 or 3.
2 out of 3?
How Jesse? Sweep it is.
You're the optimist on this show here.
You're always the optimist, Jesse.
Yeah. Someone has to be positive.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And hey, your prediction's been right once so far. You called the sweep against the Nationals, and sure enough, they got that done. Scott, I'm with you. 2 out of 3 as well. I think we'll just have a game where the bats go cold. We don't hit with runners in scoring position, and that'll be the culprit. Overall, ending a 5.5 game road trip. Gentlemen, anything else you want to mention before we get out of here today?
I'll jump in right now. Yeah. I've got my live baseball talk show that I run. So Baseball Town is happening on Thursday, April 17th. So it's the off day between the Atlanta and the Seattle series. If you're around Toronto, you should come check it out. It's at the Comedy Bar on Bloor. Tickets are just a little more than $20. You can get them at thecomedybar.ca. Again, the name of the show is Baseball Town. The guests on this are going to be from Sportsnet, Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz. And then formerly of Sports Illustrated, now writing with Blue Jays Nation, Mitch Bannon's going to be there. We've got the boys from Blue Jays Today coming down. We're going to do a roast battle between the Seattle Mariners and the Toronto Blue Jays. So we've got a very funny comic from Seattle representing the Mariners and a very funny comic out of Toronto representing our Blue Jays. Should be a lot of fun. So again, that's comedybar.ca, Baseball Town. We do it monthly, and I know you boys are there almost every single show and can back up the fact it's a good time.
Yeah, fully co-sign the event. We're going to try to make it out for this week. No guarantee, but we're going to try to make it out here as well. Absolutely a great event to go to. We'll post the links down below so you can watch it and you can find the link to get there. Would absolutely recommend going. Jesse and I, we've had a lot of fun going to these events in the past.
Always love it. Oh,
definitely. Great time, great people. Can't go wrong.
That's right.
That's exactly it. All right. Well, gentlemen, that'll do it for our episode here today. Thank you all for joining us. We will be back on Sunday night to recap the series against the Baltimore Orioles and hopefully another series win. For Jesse Tricio, for Scott Belford, I am Jesse Burrell. Thank you all for watching. And in the meantime, let's go Blue Jays.
Thanks, guys.
Go Jays.